The new Secretary of Defense, Ashton Carter, will have some new input on transforming business operations at the department. The Defense Business Board has recommendations for Secretary Carter and his colleagues at the top of the Pentagon for improving the department's business operations. Bill Phillips is principal in charge of the Federal Advisory Unit at KPMG and chair of the Defense Business Board Task Force that produced these recommendations. Bill, it's a pleasure to have you back on the program. What was your charge? Ironically, I read from Dr. Carter when he was a Deputy Secretary of Defense. What did he ask you to look at and to produce that you've produced now in this work? Thanks for coming on, as always, Bill.
Well, Francis, thank you. I'm happy to be back. Thank you very much. So when Secretary Carter was the Deputy Secretary, one of the things that the department is responsible for doing every 4 years is creating something called the Quadrennial Defense Review, the QDR. And it is sort of a strategic layout that they present to Congress as to where they think they're going, what are the issues and challenges and trends that face them. And we were charged as the board to help them identify and assess major business issues that the department was going to face during the period of the QDR. And keep in mind, this was really at the beginning of the sequestration conversation. So there were a lot of questions about what was going to happen and where they were going. And we were asked to really address the challenges in the Defense Department from the perspective of how do commercial enterprises that are facing resource challenges the way the Defense Department was and still is, how did they address that issue to the extent that what they do has relevancy to a public sector organization like the DoD? So we were asked to identify major business issues that the department would need to consider, try to assess the impact that would have, share what successful private sector organizations, processes, and techniques might be applied to those things, and then make some recommendations around implementation processes. And so that was the chart that then Deputy Secretary Carter gave us.
And so you must have confidence that since he asked you to do it, you have a ready ear now that you've submitted this work. I read that the background here states that you looked at several major trends to refine the study's scope. You looked at the national debt, and I think the implication there is self-evident to folks that are paying attention to this. You looked at defense missions, the overall landscape that we're the world that we're living in and in which we might expect the Defense Department, the United States military, to respond. And the one I'm particularly interested in was historic DoD budgets. What did you hope to find as you assessed historic DoD budgets, wanted to compare them to what we have today and what we may expect, especially given legislation that's in place in the coming, say, half decade to decade?
Well, what we did with the trends, Francis, is we went back to Korea and you know, post-Korea, post-Vietnam, post-Cold War, and now sort of the post-height of Afghanistan and Iraq, the story in the department has been, you know, 30 to 40% reductions over a period of a few years. And so we used that as much as a burning platform that said, look, these are the trends that we're facing. This is what the department has struggled with in the past. Are there lessons learned there that we ought to be applying here? Plus just the fact that although we would hope that budgets wouldn't go down, they in fact do. And so it was really as much a backdrop to underpin the importance of what we were doing, and that really, I think, has been reflected in some of the comments that now Secretary Carter shared in his confirmation hearings, that we went and looked at those trends.
And I take away from this, from one statement in particular in this report, that you're pretty much convinced budgets are going down considerably, whether it's through sequestration or some other mechanism or just through natural attrition. We're going down for a while. Am I reading the right thing from what you're writing?
That's correct. I mean, and that's, you know, that's where the department is sort of has its outlook today, and it really creates the I think the importance of making sure that the dollars that they do get are applied to those things that are the most important. You know, the complexity and the number of the missions continue to expand, even in areas that, you know, you don't think of as a typical military mission, like the support of the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, that typically an organization like DoD is asked to to deal with, because they have the ability to execute and they have the logistics and the supply chain to support an execution of a program like that. So as the world around them changes and the missions change, how do we align our budget to be most effective in addressing those missions, moving from overhead to mission operations.
Bill Phillips of KPMG is a member of the Defense Business Board, and his task force produced a report on business operations recommendations for the Secretary of Defense and the top leadership at DOD, and you can find a link to that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You mentioned at the beginning of our conversation that you wanted to look, Bill, at how some private sector organizations responded to similar challenges, and you have a really fascinating case study of IBM. Where was IBM in 1993 that you found was similar in situation to where DOD is today?
Yeah, although nobody is as big as the Department of Defense, IBM in those days was certainly the size of the Army or the size of the Navy or the Air Force, a $100 billion corporation that was struggling, quite frankly, with staying in business in the way they had historically. I mean, Big Blue, that had sort of led the technology charge, was faced with a dramatically changing world as PCs came in and the large mainframes were going out. And so they were faced with really almost the issue of potentially going bankrupt. And what they were, they had a number of characteristics that are very similar to what DOD is dealing with now. They're large, measuring things in billions of dollars. They were faced with decreasing resources, by the way, also measured in billions of dollars. They were faced with business operations in which the integration around the world was poor. The financial processes, the supply chain, the IT business components of the organization were duplicative, triplicative. Organizational inefficiency needed to be improved, and it was actually a pretty paternalistic organization. Outstanding benefits, yet increasingly in pensions and medical care costs, increasingly unaffordable. And so they had to really take a hard look at their business in the early 90s and readjust and really rethink their business models to stay in business, and then in fact thrive in the years after that.
And you write in this case study, IBM leadership established 90-day priorities in order to stop hemorrhaging cash, right-size the organization, and identify a strong chief financial officer and head of human resources. And you talk about what actions IBM took in the subsequent year and 2 years that got them back on track. The difference is their board of directors didn't consist, I imagine, of 535 people who were elected to those positions, each of whom has a vested interest, to some degree at least, of the Defense Department continuing in the direction that it's operating in now, even if that's not in the best interest of the country overall.
Right. Well, I mean, one of the truths about democracy is it's not the most efficient way to do things. And you're absolutely right. The role that Congress plays as a board of directors or as key stakeholders, however you want to characterize them, is quite different than the board of directors that an IBM or any other commercial enterprise has. So I think being realistic in terms of what we laid out and what we suggest for the department was not that they couldn't do some of the same things, but we did recognize that the time frame, to say that we're going to go in and we're going to, take out X number of dollars in 90 days, not quite as realistic in an environment like DOD that's much more complex. But we do believe that the thought processes that major corporations that have undergone these kinds of restructurings the way an IBM has, that the methodologies in theory apply to DOD, even if the percentage of savings might be a little bit less than in a commercial enterprise, because we have a number of conflicting constituencies amongst our 535 member board of directors.
You have two recommendations for the Defense Department in this, and I'd like to ask you to tell me the detail each of them a little bit for me. The first one is to drive financial transparency for better management visibility and create a cost management culture throughout DOD. That term cost management culture is similar to the cost culture phrase that I heard from Beth McGrath a number of times when she was DCMO. Is it the same idea?
It is. In fact, we had conversations with Beth when she was still in that role in the early days of this study. It's best summarized in one of the very senior military leaders in the Department of Defense made the comment to us. He said, you know, one of the challenges that we face is we make a lot of decisions. We make them quickly sometimes, but we very rarely ask the question about financial implications. Not that you should necessarily. I mean, if you've got to send a ship to go save somebody, or you need to evacuate an embassy, or you know, you don't stop and say, well, how much is that going to cost? Should we do that or should we not do that? But nonetheless, when you're making acquisition decisions, when you're making decisions around a future direction of a program, the department needs to get better at making those decisions. And one of the biggest challenges they face is, frankly, and they know this, that they don't know what things cost. They know what the budget for things might be, but they don't know what things cost or should cost. And until you get that, it becomes pretty difficult to make a lot of fundamental business decisions, certainly the way a commercial enterprise would do, or for that matter, other government agencies which have probably a better sense of what things cost.
And that concept that you outlined at the beginning, when something has to happen, we don't ask how much does it cost and make a decision to do it or not based on that, kind of is linked, it seems to me, to number two, and that is reducing the costs of the defense agencies. And this report says concentrate on agencies whose primary mission is business operations. You list as potential examples DLA, DISA, DFAS, and so on.
Right. Yeah, if you think the Department of Defense back in the 1980s was pretty forward thinking in terms of the notion of shared services organizations, and they created a number of these agencies like DLA, like DFAS, like DISA, to perform common services that prior to that were being duplicated in the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, Marines, and elsewhere. Collectively, the sort of six or seven defense agencies that we looked at spend about $60 billion a year. That's a lot of money. And they provide true business functions and business activities for the Department of Defense. And so it was our feeling that if we could tackle that, if the Department of Defense could tackle and improve the business operations of those agencies, that would have a ripple effect across the department that could be quite significant and have lasting effect, because you are, you know, changing basic business practices. They also, by the way, operate much more closely to the way a commercial enterprise would operate than, let's say, the army infantry, or the Navy surface warfare teams.
You write in this report that responsibility should lie with the deputy chief management officer, the DCMO should be empowered to drive this process, reporting to the deputy secretary of defense and the other agencies. Will that hold under the restructuring that DCMO's office is likely to undergo because of the Defense Authorization Act? Is that still the right place for this to live?
I think it is, and I think it will. But I also will tell you, Francis, it's not without its own controversy. So there are elements of the department that aren't so sure that the DCMO is empowered to do these kinds of things. But I think it's where it should be. And the point is that these agencies all report up through different undersecretaries. And the undersecretaries have missions much broader than these defense agencies. And one of the things we heard when we met with the leaders of these defense agencies, it was their own sort of lament that there wasn't enough synergy between the defense agencies where they could learn from each other and share best practices with each other, just in terms of what they were accomplishing in some of these business operations. And so the idea is that the DCMO is in a position not to take over the full responsibility from the undersecretaries, but to on their behalf drive the performance and the integration activities across these agencies to try to streamline and drive costs out, and that is in keeping, in our view, with the overall charter and expectations of that position.